You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Welcome, Greenbelters, to this session. Thank you so much for coming. Just to say, I'm representing Greenbelt, but we are here in the living room, and it is a venue which is run pretty much by the Trussell Trust. And the Trussell Trust, as I'm sure you know, runs 1,200 food banks around the country, and the country itself has one in seven people living in poverty. The Trussell Trust brings lived experience and voices to Greenbelt, and specifically here to the living room, which is a wonderful thing for us to be able to listen to and to hear and to understand. So I'm going to pass over to Phil from the Trussell Trust, and he will do the final introductions.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the living room. Welcome back if you were here before the break. I feel like we are on a bit of a TV panel show. It's like a bit of a Graham Norton, Jonathan Ross thing going on up here on stage. I'm not getting into that. You can decide amongst you who's who. So welcome back to the living room. This is a space that we are partnering with Greenbelt Honest Trussell Trust, and we want to create a space that has conversation. Hopefully you feel quite comfortable in here. But we want to promote conversation, and at times challenging conversation as well, because we feel that's really important. And part of that is really making sure that we're not only like amplifying the voices of people who are facing poverty or have faced poverty and financial hardship, but we're giving a platform to those voices as well, and for them to be able to speak in their own words. Really delighted to be sort of carrying on a conversation that Luke started with us earlier this afternoon around poverty, around class, and how we strive for justice. I'm personally really passionate about class, and it's something that my colleagues at Trussell Trust know that I talk about a lot. So it's amazing to be in this space here today. So really, without further ado, I'll hand it over to our wonderful team, which is Luke, John, Steph and Carrie. So over to you guys. Thank you.
Marvellous. Thank you very much. You were saying, hoping everyone's comfortable. I feel a little bit too comfortable sitting here, to be honest. We'll start off. I just wanted to set a couple of ground rules for our conversation. It's quite a vulnerable thing to sit up here, especially as we're some of us going to share some of our life stories and things. So I just want to ask people, when we'll try and make sure there's lots of time for Q&A and stuff like that, but just be mindful of questions that you ask, whether it's a question that you would want to be asked, and making sure that it respects the dignity of the people that are sitting up here. I'm sure you'll all do that anyway, but I just wanted to throw that out there. But I thought it'd be good if we could all have a chance to introduce ourselves more properly. So if we can say, especially because some people won't have been in the last session, our name, our location, and who you voted for in the recent election. Is that not okay to talk about? Sorry, I didn't know. Where I live, quite a large proportion of the community where I am are Kashmiri Muslims. And like, we have this WhatsApp group with a load of us lefty radicals. And one of the guys was just like having to do a bit of cultural education. And he was like, no, like white people don't talk about stuff like who they voted for and how much they earn. And he was like, you're making Luke feel really, really uncomfortable. That was quite hilarious. So I'm not really going to ask who you voted for in the last election. But yeah, if you can just say, so my name's Luke. I'm a Church of England priest based in the People's Republic of Luton.
Hi, everyone. So my name is John, and I am based in Burnham-on-Sea in Somerset.
Hi, I'm Steph. I'm from Manchester, and I'm a researcher in disability and social security.
Hi, I'm Carrie, and I'm from Poole in Dorset.
I've just noticed that I've already done that thing of being assimilated into middle-class culture, because I told you what job I did when I introduced myself, didn't I? That's terrible. I've joined the other side. Right, so the first question I wanted to ask everybody, which is a bit of a random one, but and I want to be inclusive to my non-Anglican friends, but just imagine, if you will, that you were made the Archbishop of Canterbury tomorrow. Pointy hat optional. And you've got the King and the Prime Minister coming round for tea, which is the sort of thing that happens when you're the Archbishop of Canterbury. As you've got their ear for the evening, what would be the one thing you would ask of them? So you got a chance with two real decision makers. Well, I don't know if the king's really a decision maker, but yeah. I'm going to stop talking before I say something incriminating.
Can I go first? So I, most people probably think of like a quick fix. We spoke earlier about eradicating the two children cap for child benefit, things like that. I don't think that's where I would go. I would want something that's going to be more sustained, more longer lasting. So I've been part of the Poverty Truth Commission. I would love to see something like that, or that kind of example of how things can change, set up for a government level and trying to make people who have big decision-making powers change the lives of people of everyday lives.
Just for those who don't know, can you say a little bit about what a Poverty Truth Commission is?
Yes, and we will also be talking tomorrow about it at 3:30. Sorry, just to plug that. So Poverty Truth Commission brings people with lived experience, with people who are civic and business leaders within your local area, and you build friendships and you build bonds over a year, and you basically come up with plans and ideas to make bigger changes in your area. And it makes them realise what it's like to live in that area and to see things that they don't, because they're so high up, they don't necessarily hear things that go on at the base level. So it's been really eye-opening to be a part of this. I can't advocate for it enough. And for me, it's absolutely changed my world. The way I look at myself, the way I believe in myself. I wouldn't even been doing this if you had asked me a couple of years ago. So, yeah.
I think that basically, as someone who works in a food bank, I would ask him, when will they close food banks for good? And what will they do to support the country after that?
I was also thinking like more general, long lasting. And the phrase that came to me was remember the poor, which I think was in Acts. The churches were writing to say what are the commands you need to follow. And one of them was remember the poor, because I feel looking a lot of politics at the moment, that when the policymakers are weighing up different options, actually thinking about the impact on poor people isn't really one of the things that seems to come into their mind when they're saying we need to make this tough decision. But it's always a tough decision that's bad for poor people, not one that's bad for rich people. And maybe if they remembered poor people a bit more often, decisions might not fall in quite the same way.
Super. Brilliant answers. We're going to get a bit more personal now. I feel like I'm on some sort of talk show saying that. I'll go first because that's only fair. But if there's one part of your life story that you wanted people to know to help them understand, what would it be? So if there's one part of your story that you wish people could know so they could understand a bit more about your life, what would it be? And for me, I think it's a story I tell quite often. My parents were sort of vaguely political, but not particularly radical. But me and my dad were made homeless. So my dad went down to the council offices to see a housing officer and try and get us into some accommodation, because he'd been made redundant and couldn't afford the rent anymore. And the housing officer was extremely rude to him, basically said they weren't going to help. He should be a more responsible parent. The sort of crap that these people always say. What this person, so my dad's response was, can I speak to so-and-so, who's the director of housing in the council? And they said, who do you think you are? And he said, I'm Councillor Paul Arna, one of the local councillors in this town. Please, can you go and get the director of housing for me? I've sat across that table many times in my life with people, and the amount of power that even somebody in a role like being a housing officer in a local council has, to just make on a whim a decision that changes someone's life, and how much it can change things if that power dynamic is flipped, is massive. And there's like 100 people in a lot of people's lives that have that power to just mess up their life like that.
So for me, it would be that you can hit rock bottom and then come back up. So basically, I've been homeless. I've used food banks. I've been to rehab twice. And now my life is better. So you can hit that rock bottom and get back up. But it does take time.
Yeah. So mine would be when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And then at the same time, we kind of had no money. And so we were using the food bank. We were lucky a local charity gave us like a £100 food shop. Also was the start of the school summer holidays. So anyone who's a parent knows how hard that is. Yeah, I felt really low at that point because I'd really lost a lot of me, a lot of who I was in the whole process of the diagnosis and stuff. And the stress and worry about that, and then to have to worry about where how I would feed my children on top of that just was really tough.
I think I would want people to know how relentless. I know you were saying how you come back up, and I definitely needed to hear that. I've got a chronic illness. I've been ill for 13 years. And I think it's the relentlessness of it and the way there's no escape. And the difficulty of seeing in the media and from politicians that people like me are just scroungers and we just need to go back to work. And I just want us to have a country that actually says it's okay to not work, and that so many people who are told they are well enough to work and aren't, like my sister's, are both aren't as ill as me. They work part-time because they're not ill enough to get benefits, but it also is really hard for them even doing part-time work. And yeah, just the relentlessness of chronic illness, and then if you're then trapped in poverty because of it, that's also relentless. And I think when you've not lived it, it's hard sometimes to imagine what it's really like. And you can look at people and be like, why did you make that decision or the other decision? But sometimes we just need something nice in our life to keep us going. So it's okay to buy nice things occasionally.
Thank you, Steph. One of the things we were talking about earlier when we were talking about this question is how you can find yourself at a crisis point, and how for so many people it's like, where do you turn? Like we were talking about the kinds of needs that people wouldn't even think about, but when you have a health condition or an illness which means you suddenly need to like buy a load of new clothes or need to make some other change in your life. And on the whole, in our healthcare system particularly, it's geared towards treating medical conditions with medical solutions. But actually, people's well-being is a lot more complicated than just prescription medicine, isn't it? And so we talked about how, like, where do you turn when you're in this crisis? Who do you go to when you're like, well, I've got to buy all these new clothes and I haven't got any money to buy new clothes? Or the story I told earlier about, you know, being stuck in a hotel and not able to cook for your children. Where do you go? So you were sharing some thoughts about that earlier, weren't you?
When I was diagnosed, it was, I mean, I was told I had the cancer. 3 weeks later, I was in having an operation, and I was just concentrating on my children at the time, because of course any parent would. And I didn't kind of realise that after that I wouldn't be able to wear my normal clothes, and that was really hard. I had to buy new bras, new shirt. I had to wear shirts, which I never normally wear, because I couldn't lift my arm up. So I couldn't put anything on that needed things like that. And it was one thing that was a real struggle. I had no money. I had nobody to turn to. You get given leaflets and things like that. But actually, when you're in a crisis like that, you don't even want to read the pieces of paper. I've probably still got them at home tucked away somewhere. there's various things in different places, like you say about the wellbeing places, the doctors, they will come and speak to you. There is also Maggie's centres around, and they will simply, and this is one thing that would be great to change, simply try and have people sit down with them, have a conversation. What are your limitations? What are your barriers? Another one I came up with was appointment times. I know it's not what we're talking about at the moment, but just people being a bit more human, a bit more understanding of what people are going through, especially in a crisis.
How short notice it can be. You could be given a call from a housing officer or someone, you know, you could have the threat of being sanctioned on your benefits, or you could have the threat of losing your housing. And it's like, you might have someone that's got multiple complex difficulties happening in their life due to their health, their well-being, their kids' education, their housing, etc. And then on top of all of that, they're expected to drop everything and appear at this meeting. And, you know, you'd be amazed at emails that get sent to people when professionals think no one is looking, how rude and aggressive they are. It's pretty shocking, to be honest. Like, and then, you know, we talk about the strain on our NHS, the impact that's having on people's health and their well-being, which is just completely unnecessary. And so it feels like so much in our system sets people up to fail, because it just make, like I said earlier in my talk, it's really hard and really expensive to be poor. Like, it's much more difficult than a comfortable life. And so, and yet we make people jump through all these crazy hoops and have all these crazy expectations on people. It just seems so wrong. And one of the things we talked about, I mean, you mentioned like wellbeing centres. One thing that I think faith communities can do really well is creating spaces where kind of holistic support can be offered. You know, people's needs can be really complex, and a doctor's surgery might not be signed up to do food bank vouchers or just help someone find some cheap school uniforms for their kids or something like that. You can even just find out what provision there is in your area. It's so hard to navigate all these different organisations and charities. Just knowing who to point people to is such a valuable thing that faith communities can do if you create space.
So what's a really good thing about the wellbeing hubs where we have? They're quite a new thing. I think they opened the end of March. They are literally a one-stop shop for anything. And if they don't know, they will try and help you find somewhere that can help and support you. I know, for example, they have Dorset Mind in there. Obviously, I'm in Dorset Mind. They have like Live Well, which is like Steps to Wellbeing. They also have all sorts of addiction people in there. They have Citizens Advice. Yeah, and they can obviously do referrals for like food bank and things like that. So it isn't just the emotional side of things. It is a whole rounded support. And it's such a lovely vibe when you walk in there. One of the receptionists always knows I have a red tea. I know that's funny. I always drink a fruit tea of a red colour. So quite often she sort of just toddles off and makes it when she sees me come in, you know. So they are a real good thing that we've got in our area, and I know that they're trying to expand them across Dorset, definitely.
And it also shows that that cup of tea with someone is so important, that you literally need to like have that cup of tea and just say, hello, how are you? How was your day? How easy is that to do? You know, just doing that can make someone's day. You might be the first person that person had spoken to in days. Maybe the only person they speak to.
We were talking about how it should be mandatory for churches to have a smoking area earlier as well, weren't we?
Oh, yes.
Because we were all getting a bit overwhelmed and went and hid in a quiet corner and had a smoke to plan this session. But it's true, like, there's just simple things you can do to make people feel human in a very dehumanising world. And I think so many of our structures and our systems have become so dehumanising in the culture. Let's hope that begins to change a little bit. I mean, I'm not filled with hope, just purely based on a change of government. But the systems have become, they just crush the humanity out of people. It's horrific. Right, okay, here's an opportunity to drag some people a little bit. What's the one thing that churches or Christians do to try and help that is really irritating? I can see a twinkle in your eyes that you've got something to say.
The one that irritates me is when every time you do something helpful on a practical level, like maybe you run a youth club or you do debt advice, you have to throw in something Christian as well. So you have to have the God slot at the end, or you have to offer to pray. And I'm just thinking, well, if I was in, say I was in a Muslim country and I needed help, and I had to listen to a talk about Allah, or I had to let them pray for me, I wouldn't want to go. But if I could go and receive help with no religion, maybe I'd start being a bit more interested in why these people cared enough to help me without shoving their religion down my throat. So, yeah, I don't know. I just feel weird about it, and I don't know if that's wrong of me to feel weird about it, but I do.
While we're on the subject, if everyone could just close their eyes, and if anyone would like to invite Jesus into their heart at this time. I was finding he was getting a little too needy, so...
Sorry, my brain.
I think what I find irritating is when churches say they are welcoming and they're not. So Greenbelt is a great place. Greenbelt is like how Christianity should be. Everyone is welcome here, you know. And Jesus tells us, you are my friends. So churches need to be welcoming like that to everyone. God's house is for everyone.
We were talking about that word friends earlier, weren't we? I think that's really important. Do you want to say a bit more about what's the difference between being a friend and what do people call it nowadays? Service receiver or client or something like that. What's the difference?
I think it's actually being a friend is actually genuinely caring for what you're doing for that person. It's not just another tick in the box.
So mine would be, and it's not just Christians, it can be anybody really who says, look, I unfortunately lost both of my parents before I was 30. And some people in their like 50s or 60s go, oh yeah, well don't worry, I've just lost both of mine too. And I'm like, well, I don't mean it in such a mean way, but you've had them for 10, 20 years more than I have. I lost my dad when I was 17. And, you know, these big trauma things that have happened in my life have, you know, made a lot more of my life more difficult, because I've never got over one thing before the next thing's happened. And so I've still got a lot in my messed up little brain to process. And I do find, although I get it, they're trying to be sympathetic, I think some of the times they come across a bit maybe undermining, or like, you know, that's not helpful. It's not, it's two completely different ends of a spectrum.
If I was going to try and make a load of money making one of these like cool polished video resources for churches, it would just be like how not to be weird. I remember my sister-in-law going to church one Sunday morning, and one of the nice people said to her over tea, oh, what did you do yesterday? She said, my mum and dad got married. And they said, sorry? She said, well, my mum and dad had their wedding. Well, your actual mum, yeah. And your actual dad, yeah. And they got married, yeah. For the first time, yeah. And they couldn't get their head around it. And I was like, why does that... Have you not seen, like, EastEnders? Like, what? Why is that weird? How is that weird? Why do we have to be so weird about everything? I'm going to do it. It's going to be called the How Not to Be Weird, followed up by the How Not to Be a Dick course.
Or could you have it the other way, and how to be weird like the rest of us?
Yeah, yeah. Weird
you
is
know.
Good.
Yeah.
But the cool kind of weird.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Brilliant. Next question. It's often said that churches are very middle class. The Church of England has been referred to as the Tory party at prayer many times. Why do you think... You liked that one, didn't you?
I did.
On my lawyer's advice, I'll exercise my right to remain silent. What is it about churches that gives them this reputation for being so middle class, do you think? And why is that a problem? chinos.
Funny you should say clothes. I think it comes down to you used to have to go and wear your Sunday best and be all dressed up for church, where actually in my church at Hope Baptist, Highbridge, I can dress how I like. However I feel comfortable, because it's not about what I'm wearing, just as long as my bits ain't hanging out. But it's literally as long as I'm comfortable and dress modestly and respectfully, I think that goes a long way.
I'm wondering if there's a common pattern in other professions that people like to go to the nicer places. So if you've just trained as a vicar, same as if you've just trained as a doctor or a teacher, you'd rather go to the nice places, like the middle class places with the easier people, and the people there have more money, so you'll have more money. So then there's just a tendency for churches to be in richer areas. Church Action on Poverty did some research on this a few years ago, and when churches across several denominations had to close a church, like if there was the congregation was too small and they couldn't sustain it, these churches closed disproportionately in poorer areas. So if your church building is in a richer area, then I guess the people going to it are going to be the local people who are richer people, and the people in the poorer area aren't necessarily going to walk into the richer area that's not their community to go to church. And then if you do, you walk in and you see a whole load of middle class people and it doesn't feel like your community.
I'm going along the same lines. It doesn't have such a community feel. One that I will not name, but the the youth club is by invite only, and so even though my children, we are, you know, members of the church and things like that, they never got actually invited until I said, "Oh, why not?" So that was one sticking point. And then another one is the cafe there. They do the kids eat free, which is brilliant. They've done it for the whole time they've been doing that. They've all recently decided that not to do it for children over 10. So where I've got 11 and a 13-year-old, they would now not be entitled to free food. Now, where the church is stone's throw from a number of high-rise flats. Poole, people think, is quite a posh place because they think of sandbanks. It's not. If you go to where I live, the town centre, I probably daily see a drug deal of some sort or somebody that you would imagine's just done one or what have you. And I just feel like there's a real lack of that community there. The third thing is they've unfortunately stopped doing a lot of family or children's activities, because a lot of the middle class people within the church were against them. So they were against having messy churches, or they weren't very supportive of them. We used to run messy churches and godly play and things like that, but we just never had any help and support. So it was really hard. Yet actually, these are the people that need it probably the most. There's so many families. I mean, I can think of one family I know off the top of my head in a 3-bedroom flat, and there is 10 of them. And they've lived there for 2-3 years. They've got no hope of moving because the council won't build places big enough to house them. So sometimes the resources like the, you know, the kids eat free or the messy church is an outlet for them, and it's another place for them to go. But if they're not going to run these things, then it's going to affect a lot more than just the you know, the mental capacity of the people. It's going to affect everything within the community.
And the lie often when it comes to things like housing, and the councils will often put their hands up in numerous situations and say, "We just don't have the money," which is true, because council funding has been slashed by central government in recent years. However, it's very easy to sort of buy into that narrative and say there's just not enough money to go around. But actually, if laws were better enforced, like the social responsibility that housing developers have, where they're supposed to build a certain amount of social housing, they're supposed to build things that benefit the local community and can afford good enough lawyers to wriggle out of those responsibilities very often, things would change. And so there's this, like, all these layers to the need for change, right? It's like the council will say they can't afford to do this, the church will say they can't afford to do this, and it's very easy to get stuck in the mindset of saying, well, there's just not enough money, what will we do? But, like, it sounds like a daftly naive thing to say, but, like, who is the idiot that invented money? Like, all this stuff's just on the ground, like the clay for the bricks, and you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be this way. And I think that's one of the frustrating things that you come up against, maybe, in churches, is people's inability to believe that it doesn't have to be this way. And they think you're crazy if you believe that it could be a different way. I remember once I was on my way to go to a motorbike rally somewhere, and they were doing a hustings at a church in South Luton, or Harpenden as it's better known, and so I popped into this church on my bike, and the first thing that happened was when I got to the door, they said sort of like, can we help you? And I said, well, no, I've just come to the hustings, am I allowed? And they were, oh yeah, okay, I suppose so. And I came in, and it was a Conservative MP, and he'd been talking all about the kind of family values and how important family is, and I asked a question, something about, if family values are so important to your party, why do they not financially support families in any way, shape or form? And someone from the church came up to me afterwards. I kind of knew quite a few people at this church. And they said, do you know, well done. I never expected someone like you to ask such an intelligent question. And there was two things about that. The first was, would you mean somebody like me? I could be a professor in a university for all you know. I just happen to be on a motorbike. But secondly, how was it that no one else in the room slapped them for saying that and sort of nodded as if that was a perfectly sensible thing to say? And it's pretty bonkers, isn't it, that, I don't know, we've allowed it to be this way, the culture in many churches. Right, the next question is, we talked a bit about why church is perceived as middle class. On the flip side of that, It feels, I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm moving in different circles, but it does feel to me like in recent years, a lot of churches are starting to want to think about these issues more than they used to, but often feel a bit lost as to where to start. So what do you think is the one thing about the lives of ordinary working class people that churches really don't understand? What is the missing piece? What is it that they don't really understand?
I think it comes down to some attitudes in the churches and attitudes, and maybe some people in churches need to put themselves in other people's shoes. So like if a homeless person walked into church who's been wearing the same thing for a week, for me, I go up and talk to them, but some people might go, oh, look at that, look what he's wearing in the church and that, and stay away, where actually it all again comes down to being welcoming.
I think there's two things. There's a lack of understanding and there's a lack of wanting to understand.
It would be quite costly to understand, wouldn't it? Because if you understood, you might have to do something about it.
I think it goes back to that, you know, when you meet somebody in the street and they ask if you're okay and you say, yeah, I'm fine. But actually, and it's kind of like similar. If you then delve into, actually, are you fine? You have to then spend time with that person and understanding them and understanding what's going on in their life and things. And some people just don't want to know that. They just want the, oh, yeah, I'm fine answer and carry on with their day. So for me, I think it'd be, just listening to people, but really listening to them and not just going, oh, yeah, I know that. Or, you know, listening deeply to them and asking the right questions to get the most type of information out of them to be able to help them the best.
one of the things that we've been talking about is how unfair and unjust a lot of life is, and society is. What would it look like for a church to be a just church? What would a just church be doing? What would people be talking about in a just church? Who would be in the room?
There'd be anybody who wants to be there, regardless of race, gender, sexuality, whatever, you know, whatever you identify as. I think it would be open to every type of class, and hopefully a wide range of people from the whole community. Everybody has a voice and everybody is welcome to use it.
I think I'd want to see the church membership reflect the local people. Like, if you're in a very white area, it's not going to be a massive issue if you're a predominantly white church. But if you're in a much more multicultural area and you're predominantly white church, then you maybe have a problem. And it's the same with class. The church I go to is in a very poor area, but it's a very middle class church, because a lot of people come as students and then they just carry on coming even as they move out into their middle class lifestyles, and we don't really have anyone from our local community. And I think if we were a just church and we actually had a full representation of all the people from our community, and we had the rich alongside the poor and the native born alongside the immigrant and the middle class alongside the working class, and we actually shared our lives together, then the people who had money or time or power or influence would use it for the people who don't, and then we would have a proper community. And then you would probably see, once you've started working on like little local issues, you start looking at it, you start seeing the structural issues, and maybe you start going to talk to your MP and so on from there. But you start with the community and actually being made of the people who live around the actual church.
I think it goes back to what I said earlier, what Jesus said in John 15, you are my friends. So doors open, come in, kind of thing. Even if they are homeless, whoever, come in, God's house is for everyone.
Thank you. I think for me, I don't know if this is a uniquely Anglican or a very English thing, I'm not sure, but I think we're really quite often quite good at talking and praying about stuff. I remember when I was at Cuddesdon College, just outside Oxford, which was a lovely place to be, we used to pray for the hungry at every single mealtime, and it started to just really piss me off. So it's like, well, what? Okay, I'm sure there were, probably were people doing stuff about hunger, but not far away from where we were in central Oxford, you know, and it felt sort of strangely detached, going off to do this training away from the real world, as it were. And so I think what I really wish churches would do is really kind of plant their flag in the ground on key issues and really, you know, make a stand, make it clear that God is on the side of the poor, instead of talking in sort of insinuations, and be really clear about it. Yeah. Okay, we're going to do one more shared question, then we'll have some Q&A. If you could get all the churches, this is like obviously blue sky hypothetical thinking and could never actually happen, but if you could get all the churches in your area together without like hitting each other in one room and get them to do one thing together, what would it be?
For me, it would be look at what's going on in your community and are you doing enough? What more can you do?
I would slightly cheat and have my one thing be to initiate basically like a poverty truth commission between the churches and the local community. And then whatever came out of that, which would hopefully be several things, is what we would do. So therefore I'd get several things out of one.
I like your thinking. Yeah, I think something along the same lines as what both of you said, like getting them to work more as a community, to understanding what it is like for people who are living in that area, and, you know, Poverty Truth Commission is a brilliant idea, because I think that just builds all the relationships and it just works in such a different way, a unique way. It really does make the difference. And like you said, you can get one or, you know, two or three outcomes from it per commission. So, yeah.
Can we just give everyone a clap for sharing some of their stories? I'm really happy that we've kept coming back to things like Poverty Truth Commissions, because actually I think people's stories are incredibly powerful, and I think people's stories can really move people and move decision makers. So if there's one thing to take away from today, I think that's it. But we're going to open up for questions now. So, we've got a runner. Well done, stepping in. I'm getting far too comfortable sitting in this seat. I'm like,
Hello. I am an ordinand. I'm training to be a priest in the Church of England.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. and I've been put on placement in a church that's on a council estate. Mm-hmm. It's actually where we live. So I was really excited. But literally no one from the council estate goes into that church. It's literally like middle class people who've been there since it was built, and they've had a history of turning people away at the door, actually, like saying we don't do families or whatever, so there's no young people there.
Lord.
Yeah. So I started a messy church, but just getting so much kickback from the community. I just wondered if you had any advice for me as a lowly ordinand, like, is there anything I can do to just extend some kind of welcome to this community? And yeah,
I'll open it up to others as well, but I feel like we're in my lane as a Church of England minister, having been through that process myself. I think we've got to get realistic about power and how power works and functions. When you're in a very vulnerable power position as an ordinand, when you're training for ministry, or when you go and do your apprenticeship or curate, as we call it in the Church of England, actually you have very little power, and there are people that have an awful lot of power over you. So sometimes you just have to take things as a learning experience, and that's really hard. I in many ways I loved where I did my curacy, but it was frustrating in similar ways. So I think don't try and be a martyr, because no one's going to thank you for it. But just keep trying to extend love and welcome where you can. And when people do show up, just show them love and be realistic about, you know, when you go, it might not be a particularly welcoming place. Still, just do what you can. But try not to beat yourself up, because it takes more than one person usually to make change. So just stick in there. And yeah, I feel for you. It's not easy. I've been there.
Maybe free cake helps, but I think maybe like a community lunch once a month. That's what we do in our church. Just open the doors, put posters around, Facebook posters and that. Maybe do something like that to bring the people in.
You stole my idea. No, we've been actually considering something similar. I feel that in our area, in my direct area, a lot of the sort of, there's a lot of issues with like the council and with the whole community, and there's lots of conflict. So we were talking about a lot of the ideas of maybe an evening community meal to try and include everybody, and literally just trying to leaflet everybody as well, because some people don't use social media and things like that. And putting up big posters of, you know, free meal, literally come and talk to us. We want to know what's going on. We want to be able to help. You know, people will turn up, people might not. It's really hard, but don't give up hope.
I was wondering, I've no idea how busy you are, you're probably overwhelmed, but I was wondering whether if the community is not used to that particular church being a welcoming place or a place to go to, would it be an alternative that you go to the community? So instead of trying to do a church project, go and join, like go and volunteer at the library or the a gardening, if you've got like a gardening project or litter picking or whatever, like whether it would be an option just to join in that something the community's already got and have that as a way in, that because then you're obviously serving and interested in the community and you'll get to know people also in the community and just build friendships, and then from there they might be able to say, these are what we actually need, and if your church did this we would actually come, because A, it's what we need, and B, we now know and trust you.
Really, really good answer. Thank you. I would say one final parting thing on that. If it feels safe to do so, try doing a bit of listening with the church about what their concerns are about doing things differently and change. Try and find out what it is that they're worried about. Try and unpack that a bit. But just recognise you are in a position of vulnerability at that stage of the journey.
Hi. I think as numbers have decreased in churches, perhaps the people that have remained are the more middle class people in lots of cases. So I think some churches find themselves being quite middle class without meaning to. Do you know what I mean? And we're in a position where, and I absolutely don't think this is all about getting people into church and bums on seats. Absolutely not. It's about loving your community and being community. But we found recently that people have started coming to church who are a different demographic from the kind of classic middle class demographic, which is absolutely wonderful. But I just wondered whether we put people off by the way we worship and whether that can be a barrier. And if so, what could we as churches do about that? We do various things. We do a kind of forest messy church, we do that kind of thing, but we've had conversations recently about, you know, one of the families who have come to us, you know, the dad brings his kids and I'm so glad he does, but he can't read. So, you know, actually there's a lot of things that you do traditionally in church which involve reading, and actually for some people that's just not something they can do. So it's just how you hold everyone, really. And I just, any thoughts on that?
It's a shame Jade's not here, my minister. She's around the festival somewhere. So we do, she comes to us and goes, where have you seen God this week? What's made you smile? She makes us colour in stuff. I'll turn to the next person and go, how has your week been? What do you need praying for this week? And just things like that. And so she tries to keep it traditional as well, especially around Advent and stuff where you do have to be traditional. But then it's also, we do learn new songs or action songs. So she gets us jumping about or shaking tambourines and stuff or anything. So all different things. And we've just started doing like a cafe church. So one Sunday a month, we have tea together, and instead of doing a service, we got questions, and then we have to pick an envelope. So like, you don't even know what's in the envelope, and you have to sit with someone who you haven't spoken to or you don't know, and that's what we do.
I would think to help him to feel stronger. Maybe he wants to learn to read, you know, or maybe he just can't. You could, for example, with this gentleman, maybe help say to somebody to sit next to him and try and help him. Or maybe an audio book or something that he could listen to, audio, whatever you're going to read, the passage. Say, oh, it's going to be this one today. Do you want to read it? And then you can try and join in where you can. I think it's trying to get to know the person and what their needs and wants are, and to try and find ways to help them. One of the things that we go to, which is not, it's based in a church, but it's not heavily church based. Does that make sense? Is a special SEN evening after school for families, and unfortunately they are predominantly lone parent families, and they come and they have games and crafts and colouring and things, and then they go on and they have a community meal together, because a lot of mums, especially with multiple children with special needs, sometimes might not get to eat a proper meal in the week, and sometimes might not get time to play with a child because another child's, you know, kicking off all the time. And so what we try and do is try and have enough volunteers and support that, unfortunately, one particular mum's had all three of hers kicking off in different areas at the same time. So, but it's fine, because there's enough volunteers, we can step in and help and give the mum a bit of a breather as well. So maybe it's just a conversation to have with him and see what he would like you to do. If he wants you to, you know, help someone sat with him, it's purely that person's view.
I'm a firm believer in the idea of just asking people stuff. So it's something, it's really hard because of the power dynamics, and especially in the sort of Anglo-Catholic tradition that my church is in, there's this culture of like father knows best or mother knows best. But I'm trying to break that culture a bit by asking people, okay, we've tried this, is that working? And if you can, you must be doing something right if these people are finding it a safe place to come and to be. So try and build enough relationship to say, we're going to do a review of our services, what's working well, what's not working, what else could we try, and go that way, I think. Because it's I'm sort of often surprised by actually the things that you might want to change to make it feel more inclusive might be the things that people really love. Just try and build that culture in a church where it's okay to say, this doesn't really feel like it's working, or this would be really good to try, and maybe that needs to be in a different service or something. But
I think I was similar on like sometimes being surprised at what people say does or doesn't work. I think I've heard people say that there are trends of people moving from sort of Anglican or non-denominational churches into Roman Catholic or Greek Orthodox, because there's actually an increasing interest in a complete liturgy and a higher church. So just whilst we're going, oh, should it be more informal? People are going, oh, I really miss the formality. But I also wonder if we're sort of missing part of the issue that if people aren't coming to church, it's not necessarily because we've got the wrong format of church, but that we're just not their community. And they will come to community even if they have a slight problem with the way the service is, because they'd rather it was slightly different. And even if the service was whatever they think their ideal church service is, they won't come if it's not their community. And I wonder if sometimes we're just sort of fiddling around the edges. Like, I've been in a church that did afternoon church for a while because they thought that people would prefer that because they could have a long line in the morning, and all the people on the council estate we were on were like, but that's weird because church is in the morning. So we had to move to the morning. But I think what you were saying about having someone to help with children, if there were like several children, like, I can imagine my sister would think it absolutely amazing if someone took her kid when her kid was having a meltdown so she could actually sit in a service. And from her point of view, she's probably less bothered about the exact format of the church so much as she can just participate in it if someone else is looking after her kid. And that's where I think community is so important. If you're going to church because it's your community, you can sort out the exact details of what's the perfect service later, but the community comes first.
That's really good, thank you.
Sorry, I'm heading away. I think one of the issues is that people want to be around others like them, and that they don't want people who are kind of outside of what they class as the normal. And so if something happens, like you get a disability or something happens in your life where you get ill, you lose your job, and all that kind of stuff, then people feel particularly threatened because it brings it home and kind of says, oh, it might happen to me. What kind of thing can we do to challenge that and change that?
I think with a lot of these things, just talking about it, talking about how to make people feel welcome when they're going through a crisis, stuff like that, even down to like every couple of weeks, I have to make a notice to say we are not a church that shushes children and makes them feel unwelcome. And a couple of weeks later, the shushing starts again and I have to make that notice again. And it's like one or two individuals that are really got it in their head that it is their ministry to make children feel as unwelcome as possible. And so sometimes it's about culture and what kind of culture are we trying to set in a church? How welcoming is that culture? How easy is it to talk about difficult things and for people to be really struggling?
I think food is often a really good thing to bring people together around, and if you can, I guess if you've got then space for conversation. I feel a little bit cheeky on this panel because I'm not really working class. Like, my parents are middle class, I grew up middle class. I became ill when I was 21, so I've been on benefits, and I do now live a much more precarious, low income lifestyle. But I think I would want to encourage people that there are some big differences. There are different cultures, and I can't always really describe it. Like, certainly when I was growing up, pretty much everyone I knew went to university. The street I now live on, almost no one's gone to university, or they went to university as an adult through Open University. Or they're like me and they went to university and then became ill at some point. But there's not many of those, and none of the kids are really expected to go to university. So I moved from a point where I was like, but doesn't everyone go to university? Who are these 50% who don't go to university? And now I live on a street where I'm like, who are these people who go to university? And when I'm with my siblings and they're talking about where are we going to put our savings? And I'm like, what's savings? What's this magical thing? And it's, and in some ways it's very weird. Like, I feel increasingly out of place amongst middle-class people. But I also know that in many ways, actually, we're all the same. Like, there's so much that is the same about people. Like, I mean, you see the media rhetoric about working class parents don't know how to bring up their kids or whatever, and I'm looking at my working class parents, then I'm looking at the middle class parents that I know, and I'm like, you're just parenting the same. It's just that some of you are a bit more tired and stressed and hungry than the other ones, and therefore have slightly more excuse when they struggle, whereas you're fine, so you can just stop losing your temper with your middle class kids now. But there's a lot, like, just, you know, the aspiration, you want your kids to do better than yourself, or you're the kid, you want to do better than your parents, you want a stable house, you want a decent job that you enjoy, you want to live in a nice area. It's all the same, we're all, like, so there's stuff that's different, but if we can actually sit together and talk to each other, we always have so much in common, and if we can get to that common humanity, which I think is what the church should, like, that's the point of the church, right? Justification by faith, like, that wasn't just about as an individual you go to heaven, it was also the Jew and Gentile can come together, and we sort of forget that because we're probably, most of us here are Gentiles, and we therefore lose how amazing that was. But people who wouldn't normally be together are brought together by Christ, and the church should be the exemplar of that, and we really should work on it. But yeah, I think food is often a good one. Something about food, getting around food, is really helpful for that.
Yeah, I was thinking about the listening. You know, the one of the things from the Poverty Truth is we said about listening with attention and speaking with intention. Is that the right way around? See? And how important that is to be able to ask the right questions at the right time and be able to listen well, to understand them. I was thinking, memories just come up with my head. Growing up, everyone thought we were quite a normal family, working class family. And yet I know looking back that actually I was living in quite a horrible situation. My parents were both hoarders. You couldn't even open our front door at times to get into the property. The floor was cluttered and that. And there's something about when they were always at church. Like, my parents were always there every Sunday. My mum used to do the bookings and secretary work, and my dad used to do the maintenance and things like that. So they hid it really well from everybody. And I think if I went up to somebody now who knew me back then or knew my family, they'd be horrified for me to tell them what I went through as a child. And yet, I'm not saying that everybody's like that, but I do feel like maybe the right type of conversation, or getting to know people, getting them to open up, getting them to feel that you're a safe person, whether it's you or somebody you work with, I do think that might make a world of difference to people. I know going back to like the SEN evening, some of them, you know, I've had mums go in and say, I've had an awful day. The ex has been on the phone doing this, that and the other and just broken down, you know, because it's just got too much. And so by being there and being able to be a listening ear for people, especially in my own situation, I just think there's nothing better than that, really.
Thank you.
Right, we've run out of time. And I know there was lots of people that really wanted to ask questions, so I'm sorry about that. But this is the start of the conversation, I hope. I hope it's... I've certainly got a lot I want to think and talk about, and I hope you have too. So talk with one another, share with other people, talk with other people at the festival, and carry on that conversation. I hope you've enjoyed your time in the living room. Please do come back. We have a session at 5 o'clock called Surviving the Middle Class Church, which I'm really looking forward to because I need some top tips. So I'm looking forward to that one. So please do join us for that and do have a look at our programme for the next couple of days as well. But massive thank you to the guys on the panel.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.